Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you hanging out with us for the afternoon, that's for sure. Folks, just want to remind you, go to our website, download that app for your phone. It is the neatest thing since sliced bread, I got to tell you. Listen to the program live. Don't have to be near a radio. Don't have to be in your car or anything like that. Just do it on your phone. And it's a wonderful thing. Let us know what you think about that. We appreciate that. Right now we're being joined by Joseph Brennan, who is with the Kentucky Labor Institute, same one that Barry Craig's part of. Joe, welcome to Union Edge.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. We appreciate it. You know, you just reminded me when we were talking, the Kentucky Labor Institute is actually a labor think tank. You know, we hear about, you know, these big, highfalutin think tanks, but you guys are doing the same thing. You're doing research. You're digging out and discerning facts. Sometimes or another, I don't think all of the think tanks quite do that, but that's another story. And right now, it's very interesting. I mean, because you can provide some very serious, hardcore facts for our listeners when it comes to right to work in, you know, Kentucky or Michigan or wherever. And you can talk factually about the damage that it does to the community, right, Joe?
That's right, Joe. Yeah, the right to work has been is a very critical issue, especially as far as the whole politics is concerned here, because currently the Kentucky Senate has got a wide majority of Republican votes. And totally dominates the Democrats, but the House is on a very slow small margin, like it's like 54 Democrats to 46 Republicans. And with the last election, there was a very critical moment, because if the right to work was presented by both houses, if they were controlled by the Republicans, It could be presented for a veto to our Democratic governor, but then it would need only a simple majority, and all of that stuff would become law in Kentucky.
Right.
So
right.
This was extremely extremely critical. This last election, as was a whole number of other things like charter schools, minimum wage, prevailing wage. All of these things would have fallen by that if we hadn't maintained that's a small margin.
Now, Joe, one of the things that I talk to people about on a regular basis, and, you know, when you're in a right-to-work state, unless you're in a unionized job or work site, you're, on average, people lose about 20% in their paycheck, don't they?
Yeah, at least that, yeah, because, I had the privilege of addressing in a private meeting, kind of on an educational basis, some of the progressive legislators here, and I pointed out that there were a lot of things that that people don't realize when it's being presented in the hearings, and basically what it's presented as a way of stimulating the economy. And one of the points that I brought out was that there are a number of states, six or eight states, that have had this right to work thing since going back to Arizona in 1946, and then you have Arkansas and Georgia and North Carolina, Tennessee, and none of these are really outstanding in terms of long-term economic development. The other thing that I've noticed is that in going through material that doesn't appear to be related to right to work, but you find that that there are shortfalls in terms of their total economic project in 5 out of 10 of these states that are right to work. And another issue, there is about eight states that are on the top of the list for low food security, which means people don't have enough money to go out and buy decent food for their kids in these right to work states. So there are an awful lot of things that that come up in terms of the economic issues. One of my favorite ones is the question of Caterpillar, which moved its plant from Canada to Indiana, and it was written up on the front page of the Wall Street Journal as one of the success stories of Right to Work. Well, what it didn't say was that the workers in Canada were receiving $22 to $24 an hour wage plus benefits, and when they brought it down to Indiana, they were getting $10 an hour, and then having to depend on government assistance for housing and
right.
food stamps, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. And my next question is how much money did Indiana pay to Caterpillar in the way of tax incentives and other things to bring those jobs there? And then at that pay rate, mm-hmm. how many centuries would it take to recoup that money in
yeah.
these reduced wages?
Well, this is the other thing is like, and I mentioned this to the representatives here, that here in Kentucky, the state revenues come down to like about $9 billion a year, but the tax incentives come down to $12 billion a year. So it doesn't.
Oops.
I said to them, I don't know. That doesn't seem to make too much sense economically, you know?
Right. Exactly. You know, and that's one of the points. You know, this is one of the points I try and bring up, okay? And I have my personal things against Right to Work. Now, there are people who actually believe that Right to Work is going to kill unions, okay? And they actually believe that fair share or lack of a payment of fair share is going to kill unions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't. And they have tried that, and they have tried it, and they have tried it again and again and again. And look at Senator Corker down in Tennessee. Oh, if Volkswagen unionizes, it's going to leave the state, and they're not going to bring in new lines and all this kind of other stuff, okay? The vast majority of jobs that were created in Tennessee were created by the unions and their signatory employers at Volkswagen and at GM.
Mm-hmm. And, well, there's another thing that's serious here. Well, with this Right to Work is that the counties here that are predominantly controlled by Republican the Republican Party, they're trying to initiate their own right-to-work ordinances for the county.
Right, which is against the state law and federal statute.
Exactly. And there are a number of these. There are, I don't know, 8 or 10 of these right now that have initiated these things. There is one county, however, that has initiated an anti-right-to-work ordinance.
There you go. And Joe, listen, we've got to get going. We're up against a hard break. I want to get you back, and we want to talk about these things on a more regular basis, and we appreciate you being with us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
And I'll talk to you soon. And that was Joe Brennan with the Kentucky Labor Institute. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Imagine me, a dog, moving in with a human. I didn't know how it would work. Turns out, my human's pretty entertaining. For instance, every time I give my human his ball, he throws it as far as he can. And I'm like, dude, that's your ball. So I go get it. But he just throws it. Again. I gotta say, though, the more he does it, the funnier it is. I love my human.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. How do I choose a book? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual. If a book's really impressing me and the writing is really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is, because the endings of books should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org, because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
You must be your fairy godmother.
Cinderella's dream comes true because the glass slipper fits.
It fits.
In our world, the right fit can be just as important, especially when it comes to car seats. Always choose a car seat that's the right fit for your child's age and size to make sure your little pumpkin gets there safely every time.
Hop in, dear.
Thank you.
For more information, visit safercar.gov/the right seat. This message has been brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Confusion ever someone or have sudden...
Have you ever had sudden confusion, trouble speaking, or understanding someone?
It could be one of the 5 signs of stroke.
Sudden weakness or numbness of the face, arm, or leg.
Sudden trouble with vision in one or both eyes.
Suddenly having trouble walking or difficulty with balance.
Or a sudden intense headache that comes out of nowhere.
Don't wait. Call 911 immediately.
Time lost is brain lost.
Find out more at powertoendstroke.org. Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. Joining us now, we've got Frank Emspach of Workers Independent News in Madison, Wisconsin. Frank, welcome back.
Yes, hi. Hi, good to be back, although it could be a better day here in Madison. But, you know, there were good things happening in other parts of the country. But here, yesterday, the Senate, as predicted, voted to pass right to work. What I think is interesting here, and what I think the listeners have got to know, is that Governor Walker, who, of course, engineered this whole thing, campaigned 10 weeks ago, 12 weeks ago, and was asked by the Democratic challenger, what about right to work? And when he was campaigning, he said, well, you know, it's not very important. It's a distraction. I don't want to get involved in it.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Same thing.
Yeah.
4 years ago.
Yeah.
He's duplicitous.
He's a politician. He's a politician.
No, it's worse than that. It's worse than that. All politicians prevaricate and maneuver the truth. But it's one thing when you say, well, I'm not interested, and then, in fact, you're plotting behind the scenes to make sure it happens. There's a level of duplicity here that is usually not seen. I mean, look at the whole thing with Obama and trust and everything.
Frank, you know, here's the deal. Something has to be done between now and 2016. And people
Correct.
Need to be involved. And I got to ask you, the last election, what was the voter participation?
Less than 50%.
50%. Okay. So,
or less than. So you're talking about a guy who got elected with 26% of the eligible voters. And of that 26%, most people were not working class white people. So this rap that somehow or other American workers, in at least in Wisconsin, have no idea what's going on isn't true. That's a problem. People didn't vote and were not energized to vote. That's a political problem on the part of the Democrats. But I would not say, and do not say, that here, at least, that white workers primarily, this state is 88% white, voted against their interests. They didn't vote, which in effect meant a bad thing. But that's different than being won to a conservative anti-worker program. And people have not been won to that in this state. Listen, it was 3 degrees yesterday, and there were still 3,000 or 4,000 people out there in front of the State House, and there'll be another few thousand people this weekend. It's true. Demonstrations in themselves don't win things. You need the kind of political action that we saw in Chicago Tuesday, where Emmanuel Rahm you know, who wanted to, who expected to win, right? Win a 50%. He didn't get it. He didn't get it because working people mobilized. So, you know, there are things going on that in the national picture can be quite positive. Here it's going to be pretty tough.
I agree. And unfortunately, that is, and I'm sure you would reiterate, one of the lessons that those people who didn't come out and vote are going to have to learn the hard way.
We're certainly learning it. The this is going to be difficult here. But basically, what I could see from the spirited feel, what you've got really when people come out when it's like this, it's 3 now or 8 or something, it's a 20-mile-an-hour wind. When people come out in this kind of weather, what you've got are a hardcore of committed union people. And those people, our friends, are not going away. And I think what you're going to see here in this state anyway in the next 6 or 8 months, 10 months, a year, is more and more direct action and people saying, listen, you know, we can't depend on the politicians. We're going to have to depend on ourselves. If that kind of movement happens, then, you know, it's a whole different ball game, and I hope it happens. We in this state have to do everything possible to show people in other states what kind of a guy this is.
I agree. You have to have that discussion, but you also have to have the discussion, what are you going to do in 2016? I mean, we know we know that Governor Walker is already geared up to run for vice president. We know that. We get it. Understand it.
Yeah.
We don't know who.
Nobody's going to pick him for president. But you're right. A heartbeat away and all that.
Yeah. So what are we going to, what are you in Wisconsin going to do? And what the rest of the people here in the United States going to do? And, you know, we've been through this as labor before. We've been through it before there was a labor relations board, before there was dues checkoff. We negotiated those things. We got them through concerted action. And we'll just have to work real hard to get them again.
I think that's what we're going to see. In this state, if you talk about the politics, I think what's going to happen here is that many, many people in the labor movement are going to say, exactly what you just, you know, the guy's running for something else. He doesn't care about Wisconsin. And people are going to do everything possible to show what kind of governor he is in the hopes that other folks will say, we don't want this guy. Even Republicans will say, he's too divisive. He's just too far out there. I hope that happens. You know, but that we you know, we're doing radio here. I'm not the labor leaders. And the we'll see what the response is of organized labor. Right now, the response is figure out how to fight it. But, you know, it's a tough thing. People are depressed. It's hard. The state contracts have been eviscerated. And we now have a series of public sector, private sector contracts. We'll see where people are at with this over the next year or so.
That's it, Frank. It's a matter of getting them out and getting them in the streets and getting them in the polling places. Frank, we got to get going. We appreciate you being with us today, and we will talk to you again very soon. That was Frank Emspach of Workers Independent News. He's out on assignment at the Capitol in Madison, Wisconsin, talking to people and being part of the process. Folks, I got to tell you, a lot of people up in Wisconsin who are very, very surprised about what's going on right now. And they can look and they can say it. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.
It's about the work. Work we're proud of. Work that provides the energy that powers America. Work that means our communities are stronger, better, for our families, our neighbors, for everyone. Just like you, members of the United Mine Workers of America are on the job, every day, working hard. It's what we do, and it makes America a better place. The United Mine Workers of America, working families just like yours.
Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. At 7, I shower. Every day I wake up
at 5. For those caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community to help us better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
If you work for a living, listen to The Union Edge. We talk about your issues and find solutions to your problems.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you hanging out with us. Folks, just want to remind you one more time about, go download the app. It's really great, and we appreciate it when you do. Let us know what you think about it, and we appreciate that very much. Look, there's a number of things going on all across the United States, and there are people that are in desperate, dire straits that are pulling out all the stops to try and cut the legs out from labor unions. Why do they want to do that? Do you think that for 1 second the Koch brothers care about your work life? Do you think David and Charles care about your work and what the quality of your work recreation life is? That balance between home and work? Do you think they care? Do you think that they care what you do with $25 a pay period? They don't care. Sheldon Adelson, he doesn't care. The people that fund the National Right to Work Foundation, they don't care. They do care about is trying to get rid of those organizations and those people that are willing to stand up for you. That's what they care about. They can get rid of labor unions. They can get rid of you real easy. Think about it. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.
Hello, I'm Mark Belangi from Radio Labor, reporting for The Union Edge. Unions at the International Labor Organization, the ILO, have won a major victory. A special meeting of government, union, and employer representatives this week resolved a long-standing dispute and agreed that there is an international right to strike. The conclusion was tied to the ILO's Convention on Freedom of Association, the right to form a union. The ILO is the specialized agency of the United Nations, which is focused on matters of work in the world. It is managed in a tripartite fashion by representatives of governments, employers, and unions. Most labor centrals, such as the AFL-CIO in the United States, participate in ILO activities. The meeting to discuss the right to strike came after 2 years of pushing by the employers to deny the right to strike. The result would have been that governments that have ratified Convention 87 on freedom of association would have been legally allowed to deny the right to strike as part of the bargaining process. As well, ILO committees would not have been able to cite countries as being in contravention of Convention 87 if they restricted the right to strike. The employers held up the supervisory mechanisms of the ILO for more than 2 years. The agreement at the ILO meetings this week comes after a successful day of action by unions on February 18th. The day was supported by more than 100 actions in 60 countries. It was organized by the International Trade Union Confederation. The ITUC is the organization which represents national labor centrals, such as the Congress of South African Trade Unions, COSATU. The ITUC had threatened to take the right to strike issue to the International Court of Justice. ITUC General Secretary Sharon Burrow said, having created the crisis, employer groups and some governments were refusing to allow the issue to be taken to the International Court of Justice, even though the ILO Constitution says it should be. She told the media, we've now managed to negotiate a solution which protects the fundamental right of workers to take strike action and allows the ILO to resume fully its work to supervise how governments respect their international labor standards obligations. One of the ITUC representatives at the meeting in Geneva this week was Jeffrey Vogt. Mr. Vogt is the legal advisor to the Department of Human and Trade Union Rights at the ITUC. I asked him why the ITUC considered the right to strike so important.
Well, in some countries, you have no right to strike at all. I mean, try to be a migrant worker in the United Arab Emirates or Qatar. I mean, you go to strike and you're deported. In a lot of other countries, public sector workers have very limited rights to strike. And in some countries, while the right may exist on the books, in practice, almost impossible to exercise because the employer can use replacement workers when workers go on strike. In some countries, the government will mobilize police and sometimes military against workers who strike, as we saw in Cambodia. So it's the right to strike is, I think, both under threat worldwide, but it's also very much alive worldwide, where workers, they withhold their labor, they do have power. So that's why I think this debate here at the ILO is important. Well, there's been a dispute at the ILO, the employers, again, denying that there's a right to strike, even though, again, both workers and employers and governments together have recognized that right for, decades. I think there's been an effort now on the part of employers to deny the rights. I think they recognize that the discussion here in Geneva has now have real-world impacts. National courts, regional courts are citing ILO jurisprudence to find that there is right to strike under national laws. They're looking to the ILO for guidance, and I think that's the last thing many employers want to see.
And that's it. International labor news you can use. I'm Mark Belanger. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about global solidarity.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Coleman Lowndes. Some of President Obama's more lighthearted media appearances have triggered humorless responses from his conservative critics. For example, after President Obama appeared in a BuzzFeed video promoting the deadline to sign up for health coverage through the Affordable Care Act, Fox News host Greta Van Susteren announced,
I yearn for my present looking presidential and serious right now.
For 6 years now, Fox News talkers and guests have claimed Obama has diminished the office of the presidency. When Obama went on the comedy show Between Two Ferns to promote healthcare.gov last year, Fox and Friends host Brian Kilmeade had this to say.
It is so inappropriate for the President of the United States to be sitting down with an interview that's a mock-up.
And in 2012, when President Obama appeared on NBC's Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, then Fox and Friends co-host Gretchen Carlson responded,
I think it's nutso, Joe. But I just think it lowers the status of the office.
Sorry, Fox News, but you know what does diminish the office of the presidency? Incessantly claiming the occupant isn't worthy of respect. For more on this and other stories, please visit MediaMatters.org.